Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Steaks in the Six podcast. Here are your co-hosts, Andrew Forbes, Peter Barachini, and Alex Hoffman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another episode of Steaks in the Six. We're down a man yet again this week. This time it's Alex Hoffman. But I'm your host, Andrew Forbes, here with my co-host, Peter Barachini. And Peter, another big week in hockey. Some kind of sad news coming out of the Leafs organization. It's not even sad, but it's a little bit...
Heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's tough.
But it's also heartwarming at the same time. We'll kind of explain what we're talking about in a second. But obviously, we've got the matchup, McDavid McKinnon. We'll get to that a little later in the show. But before we do, how's your week going, my friend?
My week was going great. Obviously, you know me and my music. You took some recommendations from me a few weeks ago with that masterpiece by Motionless and White. But not necessarily a new band, but this is a band that I've listened to quite some time. And I saw them live a few years back. And you remember Adam Gontier from 3 Days Grace?
Yeah.
He has it. Well, not necessarily a new band, but he left 3 Days Grace and he formed his own band, Santa Sonia, and they got a new album coming out and mini EP kind of thing. And they released a new track and that's been on repeat ever since. So if you like that 3 Days Grace sound or even just Adam Gontier's voice, because I actually got to meet him and tell him that, you are absolutely amazing. So yeah, just absolutely phenomenal that he's still making music because his voice and his lyrics are just absolutely on point with everything. So give it, if you're into that, give it a listen to you and all the viewers out there.
There you go. Some Peter recommendation. I think we're going to start a segment where it's just like Peter and Alex music recommendations. Cause you guys are the music guys. I'm more of like the film documentary. Like I'll throw you some Netflix shows every once in a while.
We have our niche.
Yeah, it's a little our little pop culture to start the show or end the show, whatever you want. But
got pop culture stories for another day, I got a perfect one in terms of like nerd culture and everything from Fan Expo a few years back. So I'll say that for when the moment arises, because it's Game of Thrones related. So
there you go. Hey, you tuned into Last Kingdom yet or what?
Okay, I know you told me to check it out. I haven't, but it is on my list. Up there. It's in my recommendations. I put it on hold. I am going to watch it because also Stranger Things season 4 came out. So
all right.
I'm gonna have to binge everything up until that point again. So yeah, it's on there. It's on all there. Right. I trust you for that.
All right. I want to tell you a quick story here before we get into the hockey talk about my week, because it kind of renewed my view on humanity. I mean, with everything that's been happening in the world, we've been 2 years of COVID this, COVID that, everything COVID. Obviously for those in Buffalo, the shooting in Buffalo just over 2 weeks ago, and then Uvalde, Texas, that just happened. And I don't know if I mentioned to you guys, but as a parent, that one kind of hit me a little bit harder this time.
I saw your thread though.
Yeah. Not to say that, you know, like Sandy Hook and all that didn't, but it made me talk to my wife about, you know, sending our son to school and what, you know, the fears that come with that. Right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I was really down on humanity. I was just like, you know, I've had enough, like everything's just very, very dark right now. And we got these three packages from Lululemon sent to our house. And like, don't get me wrong. I've got a pair of Lululemon joggers. I love them. I could wear them every day, all day. They are the greatest thing that ever existed. Okay. My wife's very similar. She loves her Lululemon stuff. That said, we didn't order anything from Lululemon. So we find out there's a phone number on it. I decide to finally call and say like, hey, like your Lululemon stuff, you know, it's here. Anyways, it's 10 years ago, the people that lived here, their daughter, it's her stuff. And it, you know how like on the internet, it autofills some of your orders sometimes.
It automatically fills everything out. Yeah.
So anyways, her husband, who used to come visit her at this house that I live at when her parents lived here and they were dating, came to pick up the stuff. And, you know, like as I would want somebody to do the same for me, you know, I don't expect anything. I wanted to just make sure the packages got to the right place, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. We had the same issue with Lego last Christmas, and it was the same thing. It was that theirs. We had sent it back. They eventually got it, which was great. Anyways, buddy brings up a $10 gift card for Tim Hortons and just, you know, thanks for giving us a call and making sure that the packages got to the right place. And I, you know, and you never expect anything because you just want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
But it just, it was one of those things where like, you know, there's still good people out there and
always,
I don't know. I was going to tweet about it, but I was just like, you know, I'll just share it on the podcast this week and just, you know, kind of brighten people's day because, you know, there are good people out there and that's what we have to focus on. I'm not saying be silent about the shit that's going on because there's way too much shit going on right now in the world. Be vocal about it. Share your opinions because it's important. But at the same time, don't fall away from the fact that there's a lot of good out there. And so shout out to Lululemon dude. Lululemon dude. I'm sure we'll get some more packages and we'll meet again.
Yeah. No, stuff like that, you know, it's just the little things that matter. In everything right now, and considering that, you know, it has been a shitty 2 years. Like, let's be realistic. And even when you hear stuff about like what the death threats that Nazem Kadri was getting throughout the St. Louis games, it was just absolutely like, you know, I can't even like bring myself to like see that and just be like, come on, like if you want to hate on the player for being, you know, a pest or whatever, fine. But look back at the replay. He did not warrant that. He did not deserve the kind of hate and vitriol that was being spewed at him and his wife and everything like that. And it's just absolutely sickening. But to hear something like that, you know, it the simplest things matter. Like words of kindness matter.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why people always have to go the route where, you know, hate is the only reason to get your point across. That's bullshit.
Yeah,
like, no, absolutely. Like whatever just happened to being like, you know, friendly. I know it's kind of like the simple word, but like where's the compassion? Friendly,
but if you don't like it, if you don't like a situation, you walk away.
Have anything nice to say, don't say it.
I'm glad you brought this up, and we will get into Leaf talk in just a second here, but I want to say something about this whole Kadri thing because I don't know if you saw my tweet the other day. This guy named Harry decided to call Nazem Kadri a terrorist and said that he hopes somebody goes out there and ends his career. And I forget who it was, but they tracked down that I guess he said he worked at Amazon and something. And realistically, I hope somebody at Amazon, if this guy really is an Amazon driver, like do something about it. Mm-hmm. Because this is like that's to say something like that. It doesn't matter if the intent was there to injure Bennington. It doesn't matter. The fact is that Nazem Kadri and his wife are human beings. His family, they're human beings. and like figure it out. Like, and shout out to Jordan Jacklin, who used to, I don't know if he still writes for us, but used to write for the Hockey Writers.
He did, yeah.
And to track down that one kid, 14 years old, plays in a St. Louis soccer program. And I retweeted it with the podcast account and just said, you know, like, understand who you're associated with.
Yeah.
Because you could have 90% fantastic people within your organization. That 10% can really put a damper on who you are.
Yeah.
And the association is everything. What happened to the guilty by association?
Mm-hmm.
That's gone right out the window. And and you are guilty by association. You're going to let somebody like that. Anyways, the soccer program ended up suspending this kid indefinitely. And I hope they look at it realistically and say, you know what, this kid deserved everything. And I had somebody respond to that tweet and say, well, he didn't threaten him. And I said, I wrote back and said, first of all, it doesn't matter whether he threatened him or called or used bigotry to shame him or attempt to shame him. The fact is that he did something wrong. There was bigotry and ignorance involved and racism.
Mm-hmm.
But two, to say, I hope he pours alcohol into his eyes and blinds himself and falls off a cliff, that is a threat to his physical being.
Yeah.
So get your 14-year-old friends off of Twitter and tell them to stop writing me, because I will put them to shame every goddamn time. All right. I've been around long enough to know that what a threat of physical violence is versus, like, you know, whatever they thought they were talking about.
I also love how, like, a university frat took action. I believe someone found out that one of those people was part of their fraternity, and they kicked them out. And this is still getting to me. I think it was Mike Stevens. He posted the list of the comments, right? One of the family members reached out to him, telling him to remove the comments because they were getting hate messages and messages. So it was all right tough for luck.
Tough luck.
Yeah. Tough. Move. Now you know what Nazem Kadri was going through when he was getting those messages.
Move, change your name, hide. Okay. Because there's a reason. And if you're associated with those people and you're not willing to speak up about it, then you're part of the problem, period.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I 100%. Hope Nazem Kadri goes on to win the cup and shoves it down every racist throat.
I'm sorry. I loved the fact that he taunted the crowd. Not to say that every St. Louis fan, like, you know, nope, is...
but that 1%.
That 5-10%, the fact that he taunts the crowd after everything that he was going through, and I believe he just, like, he pointed the crowd and then to his head, like, you know, I remember, kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
Either that or I'm in your head, because he's in their head.
Perfect.
And I love how he just shoved it down Perron's throat the entire time. See you later, St. Louis.
Yeah.
Enjoy the golf season. I loved it. I loved every minute.
Another celly that I would have found acceptable. Just hush the crowd.
Yeah.
Hush the crowd.
Yeah.
An oldie but a goodie.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up right off the hop, because I don't think we didn't talk much about what was going on Twitter with that.
It was enough on Twitter that everyone kind of clued in. But yeah, I'm glad we talked about that, because that was just an absolute joke that, of all people.
Yeah. Again, no, 100%. And there was one other thing that I did want to mention that I'm actually very disappointed in myself for not bringing up when it happened. Chloe Primorano, hopefully I said that right. Chloe Primorano. She was drafted out of the Burnaby Winter Club U15
prep
team out of North Vancouver, 15-year-old. Drafted in the WHL Bantam draft by the Vancouver Giants, 13th round, 268th overall. Great story. Again, and we talked about this because Taya Curry was drafted in the OHL, I believe, last year as a goalie. But Chloe becomes the first female skater to be drafted in the entire CHL. I think this is great. Yeah, it was later in the rounds. But I think this is a step showing that we are extremely close to seeing a female athlete in this CHL. I think it's coming.
And let's not forget Eve Gascon.
Eve Gascon, yes.
From Gatineau. Yeah,
that's so right.
The barriers are being broken. Let's go.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, I hope she gets into a game at some point. Yeah. I said this with Taya Curry as well. I hope that's not just like, you know,
you got drafted and that's it.
Immediate thing. But it doesn't seem like it is. I'm really keeping my fingers crossed. So I just wanted to give her a shout out because we didn't do that last week. Mm-hmm. We should have. Great stuff coming out of the WHL and Vancouver, North Vancouver. So with that, let's get into a little Leaf talk here, and we're gonna start it off with good old Jason Vintage Spezza. Calls it quits, 5 points shy of 1,000 in his career, and I'm not gonna lie. I was on the golf course last week, and I said to some of the guys I was golfing with, I said, you know, like, I think the Leafs sign him. I think the Leafs sign him for one more year, get him 1,000 points, you know, let him know maybe you're only playing in 40 games. And sure enough, Spezza goes out and shoves that right up my hoop and lets me know that he's not going to be back for another season with the Leafs. But what a career. 1,248 regular season games, 97 playoff games. He had 995 points over that span in the regular season, another 76 points in the postseason. And former second overall pick back in 2001 for Ottawa. He was part of that line that was Danny Heatley, Daniel Alfredson, and Jason Spezza. What a line in Ottawa. Those were the years for the Senators. Like, they had some great teams at that point. I remember they had Havlat and Chris Neal and just guys that could really rip it up. But yeah, the 38-year-old calls it quits, but then jumps right into the management role, special assistant to GM Kyle Dubas. Peter, what are your thoughts on this move?
I mean, we knew at some point it was going to come to an end, right? I just didn't expect it to happen this quickly. And the fact that everyone in Leafs Nation, everyone on Twitter, everyone in the Leafs sphere, they want to see Spezza at least get the 1,000 points. I mean, I think that's it's not the fact that he retired. I think it's the fact that we wanted to see him hit that milestone because of what he's done to this team, the leadership qualities, being a team player on and off the ice, and just being a really great mentor that everyone could look up to. And the fact that it ended without that happening, and it's just like, and the fact that he didn't even win a cup, not just with the Maple Leafs, but throughout his career, the closest that he came was with the Senators in 06 and 07, losing to the Ducks. And, you know, we talked about how last year would have been the year for a deep run. If they beat Tampa Bay, they could have gone on a deep run. So he had every opportunity, and it just sucks that he wasn't able to win one as a player. But now that he's taking that, you know, I was going to say assistant to the regional manager of Dunder Mifflin, but that was the first thing that was coming into my head. But the fact that he's like an assistant under Dubas, I mean, it shows that, you know, he's a smart hockey mind. I think it wasn't any question that he wouldn't settle for anything less than to be a part and help build this team even better, because he knows his club. He knows the players that he's played against throughout his career. He knows the way the game is going right now, and I think he's going to help build something solid and give Dubas some really good advice. And I think it's going to start with, I believe he's starting with the draft with, starting to prep with the draft. And shout out, I tweeted at Kyle Dubas with my list of prospects that the Maple Leafs should draft. So hopefully him and Spezza read that. But I love it. It was fantastic. I think it was inevitable that Spezza was going to be in a higher role once he retired. Maybe we even thought of him being behind the bench, kind of like Alex Burrows with the Senators. But, I mean, fantastic career. And I remember watching him, or going to my first OHL game with the Mississauga Ice Dogs when, you know, Don Cherry was owning it and they were absolutely garbage with their record. And I always loved the way that Jason Spezza played every time he hit the ice. And me being a 10-year-old kid going to an OHL game, watching him play, watching him lace it up, watching him get drafted, watching him play in the Battle of Ontario. And I hated that because he was one of my favorite players and I had to despise him because of that rivalry. Watching him with Dallas, watching him with Toronto, it's just absolutely fantastic. I mean, I wish he had a little bit more success. I wish he got a cup. But now I'm thinking maybe he gets a cup as part of that leadership or that management team. Hopefully he gets his name etched on it. And I hope all the players know it's on the line. I mean, he's not very far. He can still communicate with them. It's just now in a different role.
Yeah, no, I think it's the move to management is so key because not only everything that you mentioned, but he's a guy that people listen to, right?
Yeah.
That was his role on this team for the last few years, was to be that veteran leader. You know, let these kids know what it takes to get to where you want to be, how difficult it is to make a run, how, you know, you might only get one shot at it. And he is a guy that he was heard in the room. And what I thought was great about Jason Spezza in Toronto was that when he came here, he was one of the first guys to step in front of the mic every single game, every single practice, always had something to say, knew how difficult this media was going to be, right? Like
whether he was benched or not.
Yeah, whether he was benched or not. I mean, even when Babcock benched him in his first game at home,
yeah.
You know, still just spoke to the media without really throwing anybody under the bus. He was a team guy. The mentality was that he wanted to, you know, be there for his teammates, but also, you know, be an organizational spokesperson, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, what better place to do it than Toronto, right? Where if you're in there and you're in front of the media, you're in front of the cameras, you're constantly going to be one of those faces that people recognize and people expect to be kind of the speaker of the team. And he did it in a way that he was a leader right up until, you know, guys like Austin Matthews were ready to take that role. Mitch Marner was ready to take that role. Jack Campbell's out there every time talking to the media. And like there's nights where some guys aren't willing to talk. Like I've been in the room when after the game in Ann Arbor, I think there was, you know, some of the guys didn't come out to talk. Right. And he was there every single time. And I think to Adam, and here's the thing, you tweeted at Kyle Dubas. I think they listened to the show. Because I've been saying for a year and a half, keep this guy around, sign him to a lifetime contract, keep him in the front office, and make sure he's a part of this organization. And they did just that. They went out, and I'm sure it was a very good conversation between Kyle Dubas and Jason Spezza. And he probably said, look, we aren't going to sign you. We signed Giordano to a minimum contract. We need as much space as we can get. You know, and we are very reluctant to not sign you, but this is the direction of our team. And Jason probably said, okay, what else can you offer me?
Yeah.
And I'm sure Kyle Dubas was right there saying, you know what, you're going to be the special assistant to the GM. I wish I was a fly on the wall to tell you exactly how that conversation went, but I can tell you it was a respectful conversation between two guys that are pure class.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I'd like get the lifetime contract out there, sign him to at least 60, give him another 22 years with the Maple Leafs, and hell, make him like the AGM at some point. But yeah, I'm glad he's sticking around. Like I said, it's kind of bittersweet. Unfortunately, I wish he got the 1,000 points. I really do.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully, like you said, he gets his name etched on that Stanley Cup in another fashion, and the team knows that he's still around and still going to be a leader for this franchise.
Luke Fox wrote a piece on, you know, the retirement and then the hiring. Spezza said, there's definitely a huge void in my heart and my career, knowing that he didn't get a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And then he also said, you know, did I do enough? Did I help push the right buttons? Did I do everything I could to help the team get over it? Just looking back on those three questions, I honestly think he did. He was brought in to play a fourth line role and be a mentor for the players. He did that. Did he push the right buttons to try and motivate them and, you know, get under the opposition skin? He did that quite a bit. Did I do everything that I could to help the team get over it? In game five, when it was 2-0 Tampa Bay before the end of the second, before the end of the first period, who was it that went to Jack Campbell and calmed his nerves, got the bench under control and said, hey, you know what? I don't know what the exact conversation was, but it kind of said, like, you know what? You got this. Get in the zone. Be you. Jason Spezza. Mm-hmm. I don't think he could have any doubts. I think the only one regret is not winning the Stanley Cup. And I kind of wish that maybe he would have signed with Toronto during his prime in, you know, those 2008, 2009 era when he was still a 70, 80 point guy. And, you know, you know, what could have been, you know, really wish he would have signed here, but instead of later on in his career. But you know what? You always have those doubts. You always question, did I do enough and everything like that? I honestly think that despite not winning a cup, Jason Spezza put his heart on his sleeve and everything on the line. And I just can't be happier for him. And I'm gonna throw out some trivia right now, because I talked to Alex about this on the Maple Leafs Lounge, and Terry Koshin posted this from the Toronto Sun, posted this out, and this is a really, without looking at it, this is a weird stat or weird fact. Jason Spezza was third overall in OHL rookie scoring in 98-99. Who was first overall in rookie scoring that year?
In, sorry, 98-99?
98-99. In the OHL? In the OHL. The answer will surprise you.
Corey Perry.
No.
I got nothing.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
Toronto Maple Leafs head coach Sheldon Keefe.
Wow.
With 116 points.
Wow.
My mind was blown when I saw that tweet from Terry. Jason Spezza is retiring when Sheldon Keefe is the bench boss and he held the rookie or was the top scoring rookie in that year.
I smell an assistant coach coming on.
He better be an assistant coach. Get that combination going.
Yeah,
played in the OHL absolutely. At the same time, met each other in different positions during Spezza's career. Let's make them coaches, man. Let's make Spezza the power play faceoff coach and get him on the bench with Sheldon Keefe.
Hell of a coaching staff that would be. I mean, two top scorers from the OHL in 98-99. Jesus.
Rookies, mind you. And not only that, you would have two good faceoff men, Malhotra and Spezza.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So,
there you go. I had to ask you that because I know your reaction was going to be priceless, and it was.
I think I went young with Corey Perry. Like,
yeah, I think
Perry. I think Perry was early 2000s. I want to say 2004, 2005 because he was part of that legendary London Knights team that went on that run.
Yeah, his first. It was actually 2001, 2002. His first OHL season. Okay. So four to 5 years later.
Wow.
I can't math that well, but yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. That's a crazy stat.
That's a crazy stat. Thank you, Terry Koshin, for putting that out there because I was mind blown when I saw that.
I was also 10, 90, 98. So, yeah, 10. Anyways, I was just taking up hockey for the first time in 98. So,
perfect.
No, we wish Jason Spezza all the best. I mean, like I said, this is a guy that definitely played his role properly when he came over. Played his 1,240 games with class, even though the league decided to suspend him for a few games late in his career. But
still BS.
Yeah. You know what? I think he'd be at 1,000 points if they hadn't suspended him.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's a hot take for you.
I also think if Mike Babcock didn't bench him that one time, he probably could have had at least 1 point.
Yeah, no, I agree. Thanks to Babcock and the league. Jason Spezza did not reach 1,000 points in his career. So
that's who we're taking our gripe with.
That's right. That's right. Leafs Twitter seems to be taking their gripe with William Nylander after he joined the Swedish team for the World Championships and seems to be throwing his weight around a little bit more over there.
Yeah.
Look, I think this has been a conversation for some time when it comes to William Nylander. When he plays for Sweden, he just adds a little bit more physicality to his game. I think I mentioned at the beginning of this year when we started recording with Alex that Nylander was a guy that I was always very hard on. You know, here's a guy making whatever he's making, $7 million and just under $7 million. And, you know, he was, I think his best season was 51 points at the time.
Before this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, 61.
61. Sorry.
Back 61. To back.
So that said, I think he's been underrated as one of the better Leafs and more consistent Leafs over the past two seasons. And I say that because I still hate his board roll where he like goes up the boards and rolls off the puck, but
the playoffs.
Here's the thing. You're not going to take that out of his game. That's a part of his game. He'll never be your physical specimen. Like Marner learned to play that way when he played with Tkachuk in London. Right, he played with Tkachuk and Dvorak, and he had to be a little bit more physical on a Dale Hunter team, right? Matthews, he's a big body. He's always gonna, you know, I think he got better when he started playing physically. William Nylander is never gonna be your physical guy. He's a scorer. He's a playmaker. He's a guy that has the offensive skill and can puck or can stick handle like crazy and has the speed and the acceleration maybe better than most players in the league. Is it nice to see him over there playing with a little bit of a physical edge? Absolutely. I would take that any day with him in a Leafs uniform. Mm-hmm. That said, you're not going to get it from him. You're not like,
we as much as you want it.
Yeah, we can't sit here and call him out and say, yeah, we're going to trade him. That's it. We're going to trade him. Would the cap space be great? Absolutely. But why, unless you're going to trade for an upgrade, why would you trade William Nylander right now?
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about this. If you're trading William Nylander or any of the core, obviously, it's got to make sense. And I believe we mentioned this last week that Matt Larkin mentioned if it's William Nylander and Jacob Chychrun, whether it's one for one or like more pieces are being added to it, then you definitely got to consider that because Chychrun is still younger or is still a young, you know, two-way defenseman with the shot that the Maple Leafs lack on defense. You know, Roddy's a playmaker, Chychrun's a shooter. The thing about this is, I understand where you're coming from, that he's not meant to play a physical style, but he's 6 feet, 196 pounds. He's got muscle on him. So the fact that we were seeing him throw his weight around with Sweden, hopefully, I hope, and I emphasize hope, that he can add that sandpaper element to his game where he's not going to back off from a check. Because I think that if knowing that he saw Matthews do that, he saw Tavares do that at points. Everybody else was getting into that. Now that the fact that you're missing someone like Spezza, who was able to throw his weight around a little bit more, you got to find that edge somewhere. And hopefully, I hope Nylander's taking that to heart, because if he's able to play like, obviously he's not a power forward, but if he's able to have that bite to his game, where even if it's not a big hit, at least he's doing his part to try and like create a turnover and create some havoc and be a thorn in other players' sides. I know that's not going to happen, but if it were to happen this season, I think that this is going to be the William Nylander that, you know, obviously we already know what he's going to be, but to all the fans that say, oh, he doesn't play the way that I want him to, well, now he's going to play the way that you want him to. Are you still going to complain about it then?
I guess my thinking is like, this guy could be the greatest player to ever play the game, and people are still going to complain about him. Like Leafs Nation has always had somebody that they need to pick on. And yeah, William Nylander's that guy right now. Right?
Sadly. Like,
there's nobody Sadly. Else. It was Jake Gardiner at one point. Nazem Kadri was one at one point. Like, no matter what, there's going to be
I was guilty with Gardner.
Absolutely. So was I.
His turnovers were just egregious.
But it was magnified because he was playing minutes that he shouldn't have been playing, period. Mm-hmm. He was not a top pairing guy. They put him on the top pairing, and he was an offensive guy that needed to be maybe second, third pairing. We saw him in top pairing minutes, and the expectation was going to be that he's a top pairing guy, and he's going out there against other teams' top lines, and the competition was just different. Mm-hmm. His giveaways were magnified because of who he played against, the minutes that he played. And I bet you if you looked at his giveaways per 60 minutes versus like somebody at the time who was playing on the third pairing, it would be pretty damn similar. And so that's my argument with Nylander. It's like, no, he's not going around throwing his body around and playing like a 6 foot power forward, but look at some of the puck battles for a second. Look at some of the puck battles that he wins along the boards.
Without throwing the body.
He's going in there and he's leaning up against these guys and he's so much stronger on his legs than people give him credit for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think no matter what this kid does in Toronto, there's always going to be something to complain about. And I think it's because of how the relationship started between him and Leafs Nation. He held out. People got frustrated. All of a sudden, they want to hate on this guy because he's not living up to a $7 million contract. But look at him. He's having one of the clearly his best offensive season. Like the last 2 years, he's been incredible. One of the better playoff performers in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
7 points in 7 games this season against the defending Stanley Cup champions.
And he struggled the first 4 games with Tavares. And yeah, they showed up absolutely. The last three.
Absolutely. And yet they're still complaining about, well, this guy needs to go. He's garbage. He's trash. Get him out of Toronto. For his sake, I almost hope they move him only so that he can get a fresh start with the fan base. Mm-hmm. Right. But then I feel like all it's going to do is make Leaf fans hate him even more and say, well, he wanted out of Toronto. Well, no, this is us pushing people out of the city.
Yeah. You wanted him out of Toronto.
I said the same thing last year when everyone was talking about trading Marner and trading Matthews and they're never going to win a playoff series, blah, blah, blah. Marner's never going to score a goal in the playoffs. Well, he proved everybody wrong on that one. And the wins are going to come. Like, you have to remember these kids are 23, 24 years old. Like, they are entering the primes of their careers. And I don't know. I just think this guy's never going to do anything right for this fan base. And I feel for him a little bit, even though I think to him, he kind of brushes a lot of it off. He seems like a very laid back person, but I don't know. I'm a Nylander fan. Yeah. I like what he does. Some parts of his game frustrate me, but I think you can find that in any player if you look hard enough.
You can look past that.
Yeah.
And even so right now, out of that 2014 draft, he's 7th in points and he was drafted in the top 10. So like, what more Pretty can you pick. Want?
Yeah. Pretty good pick.
Yeah. I mean, Dreisaitl, Pasternak, Reinhardt, Point, Larkin, Ehlers, Nylander. All seven of those players are elite at their and excel at what they do perfectly.
And how many teams pass on the Braden Points of that draft?
78. Well, 78 picks. So
So you can't sit here and tell me that, well, the Leafs should have taken point. Well, yeah, okay, sure. So should have 77 other picks ahead of him.
In hindsight, yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, it's just – he was ideally at the time probably one of the better picks. And you were never going to get the physical game from this guy.
Mm-hmm. If you were to overlook Michael Dalcol, Jake Virtanen, and Hayden Fleury, those three picks right there, Nylander and Ehlers would have been battling for that fifth spot. Both of those players would have been top five over those three because they are not top 10 picks at all. So it is kind of laughable at this point. And like you said, listen, I've criticized Nylander in the past as well, but when he's playing well, he's playing well. In this season and even last season, he's shown to elevate his game. And I think maybe playing with Tavares on that wing helped him out quite a bit. And maybe it kind of like put things in this perspective for him. Because at the beginning of the season, he was on a tear. Him and Tavares were unstoppable. And then obviously that little lull. But then when it mattered most in the playoffs, in the three games when it was supposed to, when they needed him the most, he shined. So I just don't know anymore. I mean, I really don't.
I'm going to go one step further on you, on your note on where he sits in the 2014 draft and say, look at his games played versus the other seven in front of him.
In terms of points. Yeah. They're
the only one that's played fewer games is Braden Point.
And 417.
Yeah. And he's playing for a team that's won the Stanley Cup back to back years. So, I mean, credit where credit's due. I mean, he's been a large part of that, but when you can get 201 assists on a team that, you know, is going to go on to win the cup, like you're going to get your points.
Mm-hmm.
Could be secondary assists, right?
Yeah.
You're talking about William Nylander in 439 games. He's recorded 343 points. I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's and again, too, like when we were talking about like the whole trade Nylander thing or Marner thing or whatever, it was based on the time where maybe frustration was kicking in a little bit. But let's face it, if the Leafs do make a move, you are looking at William Nylander, mainly because that's the one contract that is movable. Unless you're able to move, you're technically not moving Tavares or Matthews. Marner, you could try. You're going to get a King's ransom, but you're probably going to have to eat some of that salary. Teams are going to pay top dollar for that contract and that kind of production. And it's sad, but if it does come to it, at this point now, you're not trading Nylander for the sake of just getting him off the team. You're trading him for a reliable asset in return right now.
Yeah, no, and that's why right now I don't see it happening. I think if you're moving anything, you're moving the Kerfoot contract, you're moving the Justin Hall contract.
Muzzin possibly. I know Alex wrote a really great piece. Yeah.
If you can find a way to move it. But, I don't see Nylander being a part of anything. So Leafs Nation, get used to it. Like, you're going to see him for at least another year, I think. And find a way to support the kid. Like, he's a hell of a player. He's a hell of a player, and his speed alone his skating's so graceful. I don't know if you watch him skate.
Oh,
he's such a graceful mover when he's moving, and
especially when he cuts to the outside too. And I mean, in the first game alone, he caught Victor Hedman twice on his pivots, and Hedman, a Norris Trophy winner, stumbled quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Just throw my hands up in the air.
So, yeah, don't expect him to be the power forward that you're seeing over in Sweden. I think he plays with a little bit more of an edge when he's playing for his country. But, you know, it is what it is.
We can dream. We can dream.
Absolutely. your thoughts on the bottom six moving forward? I know I wrote a little piece about Pontus Holmberg potentially being a consideration with the way that he's developed. again, it'll all depend on how he can transition his game to North America. But Alex Steeves is another option. A lot of people talking about the potential that Alex Steeves could get a crack at the lineup. Nick Robertson, I think, is another guy. And one guy that nobody's really talked about, but maybe could get another look, is Josh Hosang. And there's a lot, there's no conversation surrounding him. He had a decent season with the Marlies. Is he a guy that maybe the Leafs bring back and give him another shot at camp? Not saying they sign him to a contract, but they sign him to maybe another PTO and see where it goes, and maybe ends up with the Marlies again.
I can see that happening. I think he makes a team unless he has like a major standout performance. I mean, he looked great in preseason this year. And I know a lot of us are pushing for him to, you know, sign the contract. Let's go. He deserved it. Kind of like had a lull despite this hot start. I mean, he was still great, but you know, there were times where maybe you would have liked to see a little bit more production from him, but you know, he still took everything in stride, played like a pro. And again, we talked about how grateful that he was and how he mentioned how grateful he was for the opportunity for Dubas. And if it's not with the Leafs, it's with another team. But with the current players that have a legit shot, obviously Pontus Holmberg on the wing, he's going to fill in for either McCabe or Engvall should they leave, or even Alex Kerfoot. But with Spezza being gone or retiring right now, it definitely opens up that spot for possibly Nick Abruzzese. We saw how well he played with his tenacity and his work ethic. That could be a factor on a fourth line role. Alex Steeves with his production. I took note of him during that whole rookie tournament with those games, and he was just absolutely lights out. And, you know, 23 goals and 46 points with the Marlies this season. That's just absolutely nuts. And then 1 point in three games with the Maple Leafs this season. If you were to get an extended look, he plays like a fourth liner and maybe even bottom six, or a player that in a bottom six that could play with that edge, that bite, that in-your-face style. Obviously not going to be overly physical, but he's going to be heavy on the forecheck. He's got a powerful shot. He's got that drive to the net. I think that's going to bode well for the Maple Leafs this season. Obviously, Nick Robertson, you would like to see in that top six.
Stay healthy. You'd like to see him stay healthy.
That's the most important thing with him. And it's killing me right now because 20 years old, he literally hasn't played a full season with either, obviously, the Maple Leafs, not so much because he's been going up and down, but with the Marlies itself, 21 games last year, because he also had that injury with his broken leg or foot at his second game of the season, mind you. And then again, second game of the season with the Marlies, or third or fourth, second or third game, goes down and he's out 6 to 8 or 8 to 10 weeks, but still manages to be a point per game player. That's what you want to see from Nick Robertson. Obviously, again, health is the most important thing. But is that going to be enough? Because what happens if he does make the roster and then he gets injured 2-3 games into the season right now? Then you got to go back to the Marlies and try to figure out who can we call up and replace. And, you know, obviously they're going to be looking to promote a lot from within this year, whether or not they do try and make a big free agent splash. I think maybe to get some reassurance, you go after. And I mentioned this last week about adding a top six forward. I mentioned Andre Palat as an option, but my biggest one is Riley Smith. I think he has that game, that edge, the puck possession style that they play with. I think if you put him on the wing with Tavares and Nylander, he's going to produce more than possibly Alexander Kerfoot and not be kind of like just a fly on the wall with them. I know he had a great season with 51 points, but at the same time, he did kind of fade in and out at times where he did look invisible. Roddy Smith is not going to look invisible on that second line, or even Andrew Kopp for that matter, if they do try to give him that Zach Hyman deal, which has been rumored to be. And if I'm going to speak on that, I'd rather give Andrew Kopp the Zach Hyman deal than Zach Hyman, because he's only 27 and doesn't have a long injury history. But then again, my main thing is that production going to be consistent? So if you give him that 7-year deal right now, you at least get 3 or 4 good years of Andrew Kopp, kind of at the mid part of his prime right now, and then 3 years of question marks as opposed to Zach Hyman. But for me, if you're going after something like Riley Smith and you give him a contract that's similar to Brandon Saad, why not take that chance?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think this is a great opportunity for the organization to see what they have within. And I think that's going to be the way that they have to kind of go over the next few seasons, is to, you know, until the cap sees a real increase, a lot of it's going to be promotion from within and low end free agents. Bring guys in like Mark Giordano, who will sign for 800K, a guy like Michael Bunting, who's going to sign for under $1 million. You know, they can't make the mistakes that they made with Nick Ritchie. Right. And that's going to bite them, right? Like those kind of moves, you know, you're hopeful when you make them, but you have to be very conscientious of what you're doing with your money right now.
But then there were the wins with David Camp and Andre. Well, kind of with Andre Kasha as well.
When he was in the lineup, absolutely. And I think David Kampf, I mean, like this, that he's playing with so much confidence. And I could be wrong, but did he not just medal over at the World Championships as well with Czechia?
He sure did.
That's right.
Bronze medal, and I believe he got 2 goals in the bronze medal game.
Right. So like, this is a guy who's not your offensive threat. He's your face-off guy. He's your defensive zone face-off guy. And here he is, like, he's been more productive this season offensively than he ever has in his career. But there's another win, definitely. And Andre Kasha, I mean, injuries aside, when he was in the lineup, that guy played with so much heart, left everything out on the ice. And I think personally, it was another great signing, gave him an opportunity to see if he still had it with all the head injuries that he's had. Mm-hmm. But for me, a guy like Rickard Rakell might be an option as well.
Yeah. I've expressed my love for Rickard Rakell.
I was going to say, I know he's a guy that we've mentioned a lot on this podcast over the past couple of years, but, you know, definitely a guy that the Maple Leafs could bring in and potentially give him an opportunity like they did with Andre Kasha to kind of like find that 20 goal pace that he had a few years back. Right.
Yeah.
This is a great opportunity for the Leafs. It's a great opportunity to see what you have. Great opportunity to understand why you need your draft picks and why you need to use them very wisely, right? There's a reason why Detroit was so good back in the day, right? They drafted well in the sixth and seventh rounds. You know, look at Tampa. I mean, the guys that they've got, Andre Palat, you know, before Blake Coleman, guys like that, like, You don't just find them in free agency. Like, these are guys that you're bringing up through your organization. Barclay Goodrow was another one. You know, Braden Point, to find him at 78. Like, I mean, I think people thought he fell kind of too far anyway, but I mean, for them to go out and grab him, like, organizational depth is everything. You talk about it in any sport. You want organizational depth. The way that you make a contender year in and year out is through your drafting and through your development. The Leafs, I've said it before, when it comes to goaltending, the Leafs have done nothing when it comes to development. And that's a big hole. That's been a big hole for the Maple Leafs over the years. And that's not a knock at Jack Campbell. It's not a knock at any goaltender that came before him. It just was not a strong point for this organization. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of options right now for them, both defensively and up front. Obviously, Sandin and Liljegren are two pieces that can really develop and hopefully help this team if they're not moved. I can't see them being moved. And then up front, like, there's options. They got to play around with what they have and see if anything works out and see if anything sticks, right?
If you were with that third round pick that the Maple Leafs have, even though that this draft class isn't a strong one for goaltenders, would you take a goaltender knowing that you need one at that spot?
If it made sense, right? Like, I'm not taking a goaltender that should be drafted in the sixth round, in the third round, just because, right? Like they've drafted goaltenders in the last two drafts. And like they're putting up decent numbers overseas, but I think what the Leafs need is they need to be able to find a way to get a pick within the first two rounds and get a goaltender that is projected to go in that kind of range with that pick. Mm-hmm. And that's when you're going to get a goalie that you can kind of bring up organizationally.
Because I'm looking at Tyler Brennan right now. Obviously, he's the projected top goaltender for this class. He's slated to go anywhere between late second and in that third round. So
if he's there with your third pick,
it's an option.
It's an option, right? And
it is.
Why not?
Or even Topias Lehtonen.
Yeah, why not? You have organizational depth at forward and on the back end. Why not take another waiver on a goaltender and see what you can do?
Yeah.
Because right now, I mean, you look at the Marlies. If Schalgren ends up starting the year as the backup in Toronto with the Leafs, what do you have with the Marlies?
Wall, but he's been injured quite a bit. Michael Hutchinson. Yeah. Ian Scott, he's dealt with injuries quite a bit.
I was going to say, how's Ian Scott?
Yeah.
There's not a lot to talk about there.
You really don't have anybody because two of your prospects that you drafted have been on the injured list quite a bit. So I think maybe you got to take that chance with either a top North American or top European goaltender. I think it's something that you shouldn't, as much as I love some of the defenders and forwards at that spot, and I would love to see them on the Leafs. If you could develop Tyler Brennan into something, because he's 6'4", 194 pounds, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got potential.
Very much like a Sean Burke, eh? Like just the size.
190 pounds, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, when you think about it, very, very Sean Burke-ish, yeah. Right? But
and on a Prince George Cougars team, too, that didn't fare very well. But then in the playoffs, his numbers in the playoffs, granted it was only four games, are miles better than what it was during the regular season. 899 and 358 in the regular season. Playoffs, 954 save percentage, 186 goals against average, and he lost three games.
So either the team was playing much better or he was playing much better.
I think that he was playing much better than the team was.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole entire season, and I still stand by that. He's just a bad a product that he was on a bad team.
Yeah.
I still wouldn't take him first round, but as a late second, maybe.
Yeah.
Third, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know. The Leafs, like I've said it before, the Leafs got to find a way to develop their own goaltender. Yeah. But they do have options to fill the rest of the roster. And that's, I think you're going to see a lot of that this season. I really do. I don't think the free agents are there and they're not going to cost. They're not going to be cheap enough for the Leafs to really go out and make a splash unless they're able to make some moves. But it'll be interesting to see what they do this offseason. Before we jump over to a little NHL talk, as always, shout out to our sponsors, DraftKings Sportsbook and Casino. Yes. Make sure I've got the right read here, because don't want to disappoint our sponsors.
Not at all.
So it's on Ontario. DraftKings Sportsbook has arrived. Now you can legally bet on all of your favorite sports, from MMA to hockey to playoff hoops and so much more. Bet special parlays, spreads, money lines, and more. Plus, do it now from anywhere in the province. Join the action, download the app, and explore everything DraftKings Sportsbook has to offer. To celebrate the pursuit for the Cup, DraftKings Sportsbook is offering a wide variety of betting markets for all their customers. You can also check out DraftKings' impressive features, including same-game parlays. Select a game and combine multiple bets, like which team will win, goals scored, and more for a shot to win big. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Get excited, Ontario. DraftKings Sportsbook is live, so so go to the App Store and download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now to get in on all the action only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call Connects Ontario 1-866-531-2600. Must be 19 plus to play. Physically present in Ontario. Eligibility restrictions do apply. See sportsbook.draftkings.com for details. Please play responsibly. DraftKings operates pursuant to an operating agreement with iGaming Ontario. Not my best ad read, but I will I'll run with it because you know what? DraftKings, thank you for joining in on the Sticks and the Six fun. With that said, let's jump over quickly here to a little NHL talk before we close out the show. Big game 7 coming up, New York, Carolina. And actually, Leafs Nation should be pretty excited about this because if the Rangers win, I believe the Leaf pick actually jumps up to 24th. So I could be wrong. It might be 25th, but they'll jump up a spot at least in the draft. So
more reason to take the players from my list.
More reason to take the players from Peter's list, but also more reason to cheer for the New York Rangers right now. If you're a Leaf fan, you want the Rangers to win a little bit of a higher pick in the draft. What are your thoughts on this game 7, Carolina, New York?
I mean, home ice matters. Home team has won every single game in this series, and Carolina has just been a different team every single time on the road.
Abysmal on the road.
Yeah, just
abysmal.
Just bad. And you know, obviously the MVP for them has been Antti Raanta when Anderson's been out throughout this whole entire time, backstopping them to get to this point. And if they win game 7, it's going to be because of him. It's hard to pinpoint any other like player worthy of being most valuable to them in the playoffs than Antti Raanta at this point. See, I'm kind of conflicted because I picked Carolina to win the series. But now that you mentioned if New York wins, that pick is going to move up one spot to 24 or 25. So a little bit, not necessarily apprehensive, but I said Carolina in 6. Didn't happen. So I guess I'm going to go still with Carolina in Carolina. But you know what? If New York wins, they deserve it because they have been the better team in this series, I think. And it's all thanks to Igor Shesterkin. It's all thanks to, you know, the scoring depth that they have. They're getting contributions from everyone. And this is going to be a tough one. Part of me wants to go with my prediction, but a part of me wants to go with New York because they have proven to be better.
So I'm kind of in the same boat as you because I took Carolina as well. I think we all took Carolina.
Mm-hmm. We thought that everything would catch up to Shesterkin and the Rangers.
Yeah. That said, I still think with the numbers that Carolina's put up, I think they're going to be able to get it done in game 7. Yeah.
Especially with home ice.
Yeah. At home. It's a bunch of jerks in Carolina and they really do find a way to add always so much to the atmosphere. That said, I do think if New York wins this game, you're going to see Shesterkin's best game of the series.
Oh yeah. 100%.
I think he steals the game. I think guys like Kreider are going to step up. I think Alexis Lafreniere has been invisible. I think he needs to step up if New York wants to win, but I'm not going to put it past Carolina. Putting out a poor performance at home in game 7. I think it's just the atmosphere is there. The storyline's there. Antti Raanta's on like some Cinderella run with this team. Say what you will about how good the team is in front of them, but Antti Raanta's played incredible hockey over the stretch. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be a hell of a game. I think there's been so many great game sevens. Yeah, I think it's going to be a great game. I do think Carolina comes out on top, though. It's going to be close. I think it'll be a 4-2 game, empty netter. 4-2.
Yeah. Yeah, it's – and just to go to your point on Lafreniere, I mean – yeah, he hasn't looked up to being number one, but he has been, like, over the past few years, he's been on a New York Rangers team that's been stacked in the top six. So he's just a product of not getting the ice time or the opportunity, and he's still in there. And I get that he still needs to produce and, like, show that he should be up there. But I thought that, you know, in the past few games, he's looked pretty good. I think that you're starting to see him start to come around, and obviously you want to see him in that top six, but it's going to be hard for him to crack that. And this is why I hated that lottery system, because we saw a really decent team win first overall. And it's like, well, now Lafreniere is just going to sit on the third line for another, what, 2-3 years now?
You know what? At least he's better than Kaapo Kakko.
Yeah, that's I'm still trying to hold out for him, but I think his time is running out even more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, especially if Lafreniere is the next guy to kind of jump into that top six.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Then you're talking about a guy that misses out once again. So
yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I would have liked to see more from him. And
absolutely.
You're 100% right. I think it's a product of just not getting the opportunities, but great players create opportunity.
That's true.
They earn,
especially in the playoffs,
they earn their spot. And that's not to say he's not going to be great, but at this point in time, he's not the player that everyone expected him to be.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of great players, the Western Conference showdown is going to be absolutely on fire. You got McKinnon, you got McDavid, you got Dreisaitl, you got Rantanen, you got Landeskog, you got Hyman, you got Kadri, you got Makar, you name it. You got guys on both sides of the puck you got Puljujarvi, you got Nugent Hopkins, and then you got 40-year-old Mike Smith in net versus Darcy Kemper. This is going to be one hell of a series. And we won't throw our predictions out yet because we don't have Alex here. We will throw some predictions out on our Twitter page before we actually get this series underway. But I want to get your thoughts on what we should be looking for in this series.
Well, first and foremost, I'm kind of sad that was kind of like one of the weakest Battle of Alberta's that I've seen. I'm kind of shocked that Calgary, I mean, I'm pretty sure we all picked Calgary.
Okay.
To win.
Okay. Your thoughts on the no goal.
That was a goal.
100%.
They got that wrong.
100%.
They got that wrong. Here's my reasoning. It is so difficult to try and make a distinct kicking motion when Cody Ceci was already pushing Blake Coleman in, and he's trying to regain his balance, and he puts his foot forward and his foot hits the puck going in. How is that a kicking motion when he's trying to regain his balance? And you saw him try to avoid the post. That, to me, that's a good goal.
Watch soccer and you'll see a distinct kicking motion. There was zero kicking motion on that play. Nothing looked like a kicking motion. He directed the puck in with his foot. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Under the NHL rules, that's a good goal. And shall we mention the referees were also the ones that called back John Tavares' goal in game 7. So
yeah.
Say what you will.
Joke.
Say what you will.
It's a conspiracy, man.
I'll say this. Calgary looked like shit in that series. There's no debating that. Yeah. Calgary looked like shit. They didn't deserve to win that series. but they deserved to win that game. And
they did.
That would have taken it to another level. The Battle of Alberta would have continued, and who knows what the outcome would have been. Mm-hmm. But at that point in time, you had referees once again
deciding the outcome
of the game. So that said,
and didn't they say they don't want to decide the outcome of a game?
Absolutely. They never do. They never do.
They never do. But one more thing. They showed a number of clips that were more egregious kicking motions than that one that were allowed as a goal. And mm-hmm. I can't remember the other ones, but I remember Chris Tierney, Ottawa Senators, literally redirects it. But you also saw his foot move forward. And that goal counted. Coleman's skate was flat on the ice, and he's moving forward towards the goalpost, trying to avoid it. And that's disallowed. I don't understand offsides. I don't understand, well, I know what goalie interference is. I don't understand what a distinct kicking motion is anymore, because it just seems all over the place right now.
I don't know what the rules to the NHL are anymore.
Just throw out the book.
I'm lost.
Just throw out the book already.
Just leave it to be objective for every individual referee.
Like, why bother having the rules in place if you're not even going to follow it?
Yeah, no kidding. But McDavid, McKinnon, what do you got? What do you got in this battle of the Western Conference?
The battle of the Max, what was it?
Mac
versus Mick. Yeah. Yeah, this is going to be fun. Like, this really is. Like, I don't know any other way to describe it. You're getting the best player in the world right now going up against another top-tier player of the world right now. And, you know, McDavid with his pace right now, 26 points in 12 games. That's just ridiculous. And that game-winning goal, you saw the emotion on his face right now that he wanted this. And honestly, I kind of expected Calgary to win, but that didn't happen. So now you got a Colorado Avalanche team right now with I say their depth is much better than the Edmonton Oilers in terms of like scoring throughout the lineup. But then again, anything can happen at this point. And, you know, obviously I'm not going to make my prediction just yet, but you got two beasts on the ice. Both can skate like the wind. And I'm sorry, that hat trick goal from McKinnon. Oh my Lord. That sent the internet into a frenzy. Everyone was just like, are you kidding me? To see that and McDavid possibly do plays like that for 7 straight games, dude, that is going to be hella exciting to watch. I lost my train of thought there because I can't find the words to describe it anymore. I'm really excited for this series.
So
even though I picked Calgary,
yeah,
I'm excited for this series. This when Edmonton won and Colorado was still playing, everyone wanted McDavid McKinnon. We're getting that.
So I think there's a ton of storylines here. You got, first off, you have 40-year-old Mike Smith making a run with the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
You have McDavid versus McKinnon.
Kadri versus McDavid again.
You have Kadri versus McDavid. You also have Kadri, you know, with everything that he's going through and what he's potentially could do with this team. Also a free agent year for him. You have Evander Kane, who's, you know, we all know his backstory, and
his offseason issues. He's playing well.
He's playing well. I believe he's got 2 goals in 5 of their 12 games or something like that. Something along that line. But Zach Hyman, former Leafs, like, you want to talk about former Leafs? You got CeCe, Barry, Hyman, Kadri. So there's the Leaf aspect to it.
Kane is a goal per game with them. 12 and 12.
12 and 12. So, like, I mean, talk about the storylines that surround this series.
There's a number of them.
Yeah, like you, I won't make a prediction right now, but I'll say this. If Colorado wants to win this series, they need a lot more scoring from their bottom six.
Yeah, and they do have the depth.
They have the depth, 100%. We saw it in that final game to close out the series. You got some depth scoring. They're going to need that 110% against the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that. But man, this series is going to be high paced. It's going to be exciting. We'll get a chance to see if the Denver air affects the Edmonton Oilers as they come in. But yeah, it's going to be a wild Western Conference final.
My other storyline is this the series where someone has an answer for McDavid Draisaitl?
Yeah,
that's going to be key because you know, it sucks that Samuel Girard is out after taking that massive hit in the St. Louis series. But this is why they brought in Josh Manson. This is why they brought in Devin Toews. This is why Cale Makar is one of the best defenders out there right now. Can they shut them down? That's going to be key because quite a bit, they didn't look so hot defensively against the Blues, and they sat back and they were just caught out of position quite a bit. So they needed to work on that in order to be successful against those two, because they're just lightning. They're again, I can't even talk right now. They're just so good.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a hell of a series. And like you said, we're both stumbling over words as we close out the end of this episode. It's getting late for us, but Peter, before we close it out, anything else you wanted to jump into? Any content over at the Hockey Writers? Anything you just wanted to say to our listeners?
Watch out for draft content. Got a big mock draft with all of our writers, and I know you took part in that. You know, you mentioned last week you selected for the Arizona Coyotes, so you know. That's in the process of being formatted and worked out right now. And then the second round is going to be coming out shortly. So got that in the works right now.
Also, the Arizona Coyotes should listen to everything that I had to say about the players that we picked. I mean, I just full on revamped your entire prospect system, and they're very excited to play at ASU next year. So, give me a call if you want to hire me. Anyways, aside from that, yeah, guys, check out all the draft content at the Hockey Writers. Draft profiles are coming out daily. Mm-hmm.
More so now that we're a month away.
I think you mentioned that we're over that 100 draft profile mark.
Closing in on 110. We should be hitting that mark soon. So we are over 100. We are going to be pumping more content out and more profiles out soon. So.
And I'm telling you guys, it's a one-stop shop for all your draft content. It's great stuff. It's great coverage. We have a fantastic team at the Hockey Writers. It has been for a number of years. It's free.
That's 100%
free. If you want to throw some like Venmo our ways, like I don't have an account, but we can make one, you know, we can help ourselves out here. But 100% free. Check it out. Like I said, great content. It's used across the internet when you know the draft finally hits. You see it on Sportsnet, you see some of our content. I've seen people at the combine use our content to get to know some of the players. So just get out there, check it out. You know, you have any questions or concerns, talk to Peter because he's the guy who runs the show.
More pressure on the spot for me, eh?
but as always, guys, great episode. We look forward to you know, touching base with more of our listeners as we continue to push here. You guys have been great for us. The show continues to take off. Sponsors are jumping in, so let's continue the ride here with Sticks in the Six. Other than that, we'll hopefully welcome Alex back next week as well. Hopefully you have an interview for you next week as well. Otherwise you can follow us all on Twitter. You can follow Alex at A Hobson Media, follow Peter over at P Barrichini, and you can follow me at Andrew G Forbes. You can follow the podcast at Sticks in the Six Pod. That's STIXINTHE6IXPOD. Find us on Instagram, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio. Wherever you download your podcast, we will be there. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, rate, review, hit follow, and join us weekly for more great hockey talk. Until next week.